Welcome to the PathStream podcast. At PathStream, our mission is to prepare students of all ages for high-demand digital skills careers. And in this podcast, we talk to real-world professionals who are working in those high-demand jobs right now to learn about how they got started. We also talk to students who have successfully gone through our programs, we learn more about the humans behind PathStream, and we chat with other leaders in online learning and the future of work to see where this industry is headed. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the PathStream podcast. My name is Anthony. I'm on the learning design team here at PathStream and one of your hosts. Today, we get to talk to Amy Ahern, someone who wears many hats here at PathStream, but I tend to think of her by one title, the real MVP. Amy is the product marketing and career services lead here at PathStream. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm just hoping, you know, you've had such an interesting career and a journey in ed tech. I was just hoping that you could kind of start us off by telling us a little bit about your background in ed tech, the journey you've taken in this industry, and how you ultimately came to PathStream.
Sure. Well, right after I graduated from college, I maybe went as far away from ed tech as you could go, which is that I taught for a year in rural Malaysia. Primary school kids in a fishing village. So we were very far off the grid. But when I got back to the US, I started working in the international development field in Washington, DC. And I was actually working on professional development programs for international teachers. So bringing teachers from Malaysia, from Egypt, from Sudan, Afghanistan, all these different countries to the US to help them learn about pedagogy. And so through that, I realized that the impact of this kind of training model could be really meaningful for the handful of people that got to fly on the plane and come to the US and go through these immersive university programs. But this was right around the time that MOOCs were taking off, which are massive open online courses, and things like Coursera and Udemy and Udacity, they were all in very, very early days. And so I saw a lot of potential to take some of the training and the pedagogy and the different kinds of education offerings and help to use technology to scale that to people across the world. I was kind of skeptical that you could do it well, but I decided that rather than staying in DC, I should go to kind of the heart of Silicon Valley and enrolled in a master's program at Stanford to try to learn more about the research on what made education technology effective. So that's what I did for a year and learned, you know, about things like coding and programming and how to design technologies that could be effectively used for learning. And also just got grounded in the basic research on what makes a good teacher and what makes well-designed curriculum. After that, I stayed at Stanford for a year and worked at the medical school, actually training anesthesiologists using online courses. It was definitely not my area of expertise, but it was a really great experience just to learn about how you could teach really anything online, even something like how to, you know, administer an epidural or give people the right anesthetics before they go into surgery. After doing that, I went back into the nonprofit international development sphere, worked for 5 years at a place called Acumen, where we were building online courses that reached 500,000 people around the world, creating social change. So they were focused on social entrepreneurs, nonprofit leaders, people in all different kinds of contexts. And after that, I came to PathStream, where I am now focused on helping to connect people that complete our online certificate programs to job opportunities.
I was just taking some notes because, you know, like so many people I talk to, so many impressive people that I talk to, their answers are dense, and there's so much there that I'm curious about and I want to unpack. So I think, you know, what it sounded like to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, but it sounded like your first passion was education. And then from that passion in education came this interest in ed tech that you went on to explore. Where did the passion for education come from?
Yeah, I wish I could say I was more original, but both of my parents are in the field of education. So my mom has been an elementary school teacher for as long as I can remember, and my dad is actually a special education lawyer. So he works to advocate for kids with learning disabilities to make sure they get the accommodations that they need. So it's just kind of always been in the air around me to think about, you know, how to design effective learning experiences and what that means and all of the complexity that can come with that. I wanted to do something, you know, a little bit original and break a little bit from my parents, which is why I think I started in international education, but I've slowly found my way back to the U.S. and back to working with students in this country.
That's so fun. See, I didn't know that about you, that both your parents were in education. Both my parents were in education. And I think that's why it's like, I guess it's not surprising, but yeah, both my parents were teachers. My mom was a special ed teacher. So yeah, I didn't realize we had that common point of connection. But speaking as one of those children of educators, yes, from a very early age, you were probably working in one of your parents' classrooms, and yep, and your mind was probably around that problem. Yeah, that's so funny we have that in common. I'm wondering, you know, going back to like your early journey in ed tech, and you did mention, which I think a lot of people who work in ed tech probably have had the same feeling of maybe being a little skeptical at first, like, can a MOOC, like, really, like, is that really the same as going to a university? Can it really be as effective as an in-person learning experience? And I'm wondering, was that experience that you had at the Stanford Medical School where, you know, certain medical procedures were being taught online and you were seeing that done effectively, was that the moment where you were like, oh, actually, this can work, or did it happen somewhere else?
I actually think I'm still pretty skeptical, and I still think there is such room for improvement when it comes to online learning and how we can really push the envelope and make it more innovative or tactile or engaging for people. I mean, nothing has reinforced this more than this pandemic, where we're all so sick of like just staring at screens and trying to engage in this way. So I think that online learning does a ton of good, and I am a huge proponent for what it can do. And yet at the same time, I think one of the reasons why I stay in this field is because I see such creative potential to like keep making it better, because I just don't think we're actually even near like what it could be and what it should be for all of these students that really need it.
That is such a great answer, that you're still skeptical, and that skepticism can actually drive that that passion for innovation or creativity or just improvement. When you think about the things that get you the most excited about how it could improve, what are some of the things that come to mind?
One of the things that we did at Acumen, which is the last job that I worked at, was we focused our model around team-based learning. So even though, you know, online courses you typically think of as something that you work through independently, what we decided to do was, instead of that traditional MOOC model that has very low completion rates because it's just hard to stay motivated when you're working by yourself, we designed curriculum that people could join the program with a team from their workplace, from their friend group, and complete things, you know, like design thinking activities together and do something in the real world, but then upload a picture of it to complete the assignment. Or they would download instructions and hold a focus group or interview customers, and then they would upload their result back to the platform. And so I think that's one of the things that I'm really interested in, is just the potential for community and peer learning in online spaces and what you could do and continue to do in that regard. And then the other area I'm really passionate about thinking of is how you can build interfaces between this like physical world and the digital world. And the analog I always think about is Strava, which is this running app. I'm a big runner. And so what I love about it is that you can go do an activity in the real world, which in this case is like go on a run around your neighborhood, and then upload your activity back to a platform where you're able to share it with your community of other people you run with. You know, you can get inspired by what other people are doing. You can have kind of proof that you are out there every day doing this. And I think there's a lot of potential for that in the learning arena too, with, you know, whether you're teaching someone to become a welder and it's like you could use AR, VR or something for them to actually do it in the real world, but then upload their results and get feedback from an instructor or coaching or anything else based on what they did. Because I just think a fully screen-based world is kind of depressing. And so I would love to see the ways that we can continue to push the online learning to connect with what we really have to do in the offline world.
Yeah, those are both fascinating concepts, and it seems to be a theme that comes up with a lot of people that I talk to around this need for building community in online learning. And so I also think that that's just it's a fascinating problem to try to solve for. And it seems like it has such a powerful potential. But I think where you're stretching my mind is this idea of like blending, you know, sort of reality with what is happening on the screen as far as the online learning experience goes. So it's really interesting that you bring up an app like Strava. Not that I use it, because I am not the best runner, but I have friends who use it and like love it. And so I don't know, is there also an element of that gamifies the learning experience, or is it something deeper than that I'm not quite seeing?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm sort of skeptical when it comes to gamification, which, for people that don't know, that's basically when you're making something kind of act like a game so that you get rewards as you go along in each step. And I think for some activities, like maybe exercising, that can be really motivating. For other activities where you're trying to learn a really hard skill, that might not be sufficient to like get you to master it. But I think what I'm really excited about, to give you some other examples, there's like this kids app called Osmo, which basically you take an iPad and they show you kind of what you're supposed to draw, and you do it using a real marker, but it can then kind of interface with the iPad and show you like, okay, did you make the correct movement? And so you're kind of merging tactical learning for people that really, you know, want to do creative things offline, want to do physical things offline, with the feedback that you can get from a community of learners, from an expert instructor that maybe are not sitting right next to you, but that you can access through the online platform. My husband also works for a remote physical therapy company. And so you see the same thing happening where they'll prescribe exercises to people and you can kind of go and do it using this interactive, you know, band that measures whether you're doing it correctly. And then your wellness coach can give you feedback along the way. So I'm just interested in how do you combine what you can do in the real world with the kind of feedback and community you can get from an online environment.
Yeah, that's such an interesting synthesis. And it does seem like a way to possibly like better connect with somebody, even though, yeah, we're obviously like separated through the screen. So I want to transition a little bit, because you also lead the career services side at Pathstream. And so I think in many of the other episodes, we've talked about, you know, really the online learning experience and all the programs that somebody can take at Pathstream and the digital skills that they can learn through our like hands-on approach. But there's this whole other big part of what we do, and it's really thanks to you and the effort that you've led, which is the career services part. So I'm just hoping you can kind of tell our listeners more about what you all do for students once they complete one of our programs, how you help them get jobs, and just what that looks like.
Yeah, this is a really exciting part of the company. I would say I'm biased, but I really get energized by thinking about how you connect what people learn to actual outcomes. And so actually right at the point where someone signs up for a course, they can schedule a career consultation with one of our enrollment advisors. And that person can help them walk through, you know, what are the right kinds of jobs and next opportunities that might fit with their skills and backgrounds and interests, whether that's becoming a Salesforce administrator or a data analyst. You can get a sense of what the salary potential is in your local market and really get that kind of personalized consultation to identify which career path might be right for you. Once you do enroll in the program, then once you start, you will begin getting weekly job newsletters. These will showcase for you a variety of different career opportunities from across the country, so you can start to see the kinds of job listings that you would be qualified for. And then once you reach the final course in the certificate, you can opt into career services. And basically, this means that you get matched one-on-one with a career coach. It's usually someone that's an expert in the field that you are studying. And this person will help you do everything from kind of tell your personal story and narrative so that you know how to position what you did in the past with the kind of new role that you want to achieve. You will get a resume update so that they will give you line edits and feedback to help you include your new skills and the projects you completed in their certificates. So you'll showcase those to employers. And then once you're ready, we will send out that resume to some of the recruiters and hiring partners and staffing agencies that we work with. And you'll also be equipped to, you know, drive your own job search and start applying on your own. And then when you do get interviews scheduled, we can do mock interviews with you. And basically, we're there to provide the support you need, from all the way from applying and figuring out what paths you want to go down to actually getting the job. And so the best emails I always receive are when people have actually successfully landed that job. And luckily, we've had many of those success stories recently. So that's always really exciting.
Yeah, you've kind of anticipated my next question, I think, but you've worked so closely with so many students. And I think as any of us can attest to, the job search is such a vulnerable time in someone's life. And it's such a personal thing. Like I speaking from experience, like, you know, just really remembering jobs that I really wanted to get, or I thought I really wanted to get at the time, and then not getting them. And it was like a heartbreak, basically. I mean, it just can be devastating. And, you know, conversely, the highs can be really high when you get that job offer. It's just like, it's just this can be, you know, you can ride like a 6 month high basically for that time in your life. And I mention all that because I'm just curious if you've had any really impactful interactions with students, or if any stories come to mind that, you know, have touched you or moved you, or just have made an impact on you working with these different students and trying to get them jobs.
Definitely. I mean, probably all of them, but the one that definitely comes to mind most recently is one of our students who completed the Facebook digital marketing program at Austin Community College. So she was working as a dental billing assistant, you know, in a local dental office. She had never had the chance to complete a college degree, but she was very interested in marketing, so knew that this certificate program might help her break into that field. She was super diligent. After she finished the program, she started working with a career coach at PathStream. She did a virtual apprenticeship so that she got more relevant work experience to list on her resume. She applied to a lot of jobs, you know, and got some interviews, but also faced a lot of rejections. But eventually, she connected with a startup called Abound, which is based in New York City. And she recently signed a full-time offer as a digital marketing specialist with them. They have since gone on in the last week to raise a Series A. So they are growing quickly. And now Angela, who's her name, she's in a position to even hire more PathStream students as her team continues to grow. So she was super self-motivated, really put in the work, but had a really great career outcome as a result. And it was very inspiring to see someone, you know, that went from not having a college degree to being able to put her best foot forward in the interview process and end up with a really high growth potential job at a fast moving startup in New York City.
Yeah, and I'm remembering the story because I think you had posted about it where, and she was also, like you mentioned, looking to potentially hire other PathStream graduates. And so that's just an amazing thing where someone can go through one of our programs, get a job as a result, and then be in a position to pay it forward. I wonder, beyond examples like that, when you think of ways in which we might create community amongst either current PathStream students or alumni, what do you think about that? Like, what does that look like to you? Or what would you, in an ideal world, how would that take shape, do you think?
Yeah, well, I'll actually turn to one of our community college partners, which is Piedmont Community College, or Central Piedmont Community College in North Carolina, because I think they've done a really great job of this. So they were also running the Facebook digital marketing program. And basically what the instructor did there was set up a Slack group. I mean, you could think of other online platforms you could use to do this. It could be LinkedIn or Facebook. But the group of students that were going through that program together were all linked on this online forum. And basically, as they went through the coursework, they also started to share real job opportunities with each other. And one of the students, because they were completing projects as part of their curriculum that were focused on real businesses, one of the students was a business owner, and she ended up hiring another student to do the project with her. And then after that, that turned into a full-time freelance opportunity for this student. So I've just have talked to many of the students that have gone through this program, and they actually have had some of the highest job placement rates of any of our school partners. And I think in large part, it's due to the fact that they really built this network of students helping students, small business owners, like identifying that these other Pathstream students could help them with different projects. And it's really been exciting just to see how this small community has fostered these connections. And I think we could now do it on an even bigger scale.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, that's something personally, I am super excited for the future to be able to see that take shape and grow. So you're going to have to bear with me because this next question I kind of struggled with when I was writing, but maybe we can tease out what's interesting in it, if anything. But you've talked to so many online learners, obviously. You've done so much research. You've studied industry trends probably more than anyone I know. I don't think we talked about the fact that you're also a columnist at EdSurge, I believe, and we can maybe tell people what EdSurge is about for those who don't know. But the point is that you are really at the cutting edge of this industry, I think, in so many ways. And I'm just wondering, like, when you think back on your experience, is it possible to synthesize some of the big things that you've learned over the last few years about the industry? And I don't know, maybe more specifically, someone who's curious about online learning or the future of work or changing careers, like, what would you say that they would absolutely need to know about what's going on right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I guess I'll take it in two parts because I feel like the biggest insight I've gained from talking to students, whether that was when I worked at Acumen and was talking to people in rural Pakistan that had somehow found this online course and used it to complete it and start their own business, or whether it was Angela in Texas who used the Pathstream program to go from a dental billing assistant to, you know, a marketing specialist making 70K a year, is that online courses are a really amazing filter for finding incredibly self-motivated people from all around the world who want to put in the work and get these amazing outcomes. And I think for many years, online learning was criticized because the completion rates were low. You know, of the hundreds of thousands of people that might have started a free course on Coursera, it's pretty widely known that around only 5% of them ever finished. But what I always said was, like, who are those 5%? Because those are amazing people. You know, they are from like this Sudanese village and somehow managed to connect to the internet and get through all of those lecture videos and earn their certificate. Or they're the single mom, like working late to learn SQL in her spare time so that she can get the next job. And so I think they're an incredibly like powerful force for democratizing access to learning, and then also to find these really amazing people. It kind of becomes a talent filter. So I wouldn't underestimate, even when the completion rates are low, that the people on the other side of those can be really great assets, you know, for your company, for your business, for whatever idea you're trying to launch. I think they're an amazing way to find that talent. So that would be one thing. And I think if you're new to the education technology sector or to online learning and you want to learn more, I would just encourage you to like dabble in a lot of different kinds of online courses. So there's everything from Khan Academy and things you can get for free. One of the sites I always like to recommend is called DIY, and it's actually a kids online learning site, but it teaches you how to do things like scavenger hunts again in your like local neighborhood. And then you're uploading photos and pictures to kind of show this global community what you've done. So I think just experiment with what's out there, realize both the strengths and limitations of these different models, and then just keep in mind that there's still so much more room for innovation. And I think that's what we really need, is just people that are continually thinking different about what we can teach and do on the internet.
Yeah, that's another super interesting framing that you're helping me understand this with that I haven't considered before. But like from an employer's perspective, if I'm understanding you correctly and seeing that somebody has completed one of these online programs, that's actually a testament to their work ethic, their motivation, their dedication, and their focus to want to upskill and take on new challenges. And I think that is, yeah, when you say it and when I think about it this way, it's so true, but I don't think I'd ever kind of connected those dots before. I'm wondering, and maybe you've already touched on this, but how does the industry, or how should the industry, do a better job around motivation for maybe the students who aren't, let's say, like, you know, the hyper motivated self-starter?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think it comes down to, I kind of think of it in terms of three ingredients. So the first is just getting to know who that student is and tapping into why are they motivated to complete this learning experience or this course. And that could be something like having them write out their goals at the beginning, having them connect it to like where they want it to help them get. Ideally, it's something that they could talk to their instructor about right from the beginning, just to help connect like what this will do to the bigger picture of their life and their motivations, and to make them feel seen and heard right from the outset of that experience. Then I think we can get a lot smarter about the kinds of nudges that are embedded throughout the learning experience, just to remind people, like, set a schedule. This is the time you're supposed to be logging in every day. This is the time you said would be best if you sat down and did 2 hours every day. If they start to get off track, then maybe you get an advisor on the phone to help them get back on track. But just be really strategic about those kinds of small things that can actually just keep people moving through it. And then the last thing I would say is like reiterating this theme of like peers and community. I think that's really powerful. If you have an accountability partner, if you have a coworker that you're doing something with, if you're able to see like that someone else is able to keep up with this, it might motivate you that you can do it too. And the more you can really connect what you're doing to the offline work experience that you're going to have, you know, going back in the office with that peer and actually, you know, implementing the data analysis that you learned how to do in the course, I think that really ties it all together from the motivation to the application.
Yeah, it's funny. I continuously hear the same themes coming up around motivation, which really lends me to believe that there's something that really meaningful in these ideas of, you know, the community that you're a part of, either the specific learning community that you're going through something with, or the community that you live within, and maybe the people around you that are motivating you to get these new digital skills or change careers or learn something new or experience a personal transformation, and then also envisioning the future state that you're moving toward, basically knowing your why and your goals and why you're doing what you're doing, and continuously reminding yourself of that during those moments where maybe the motivation lags for some reason. So shifting a little bit, kind of along the same lines, though, of motivation. So you are, you mentioned this, you're one of the most accomplished runners that I know. I made the, I don't know if it was a bad decision, I made the questionable decision of going on a run with you one time, and I almost passed out. You were nice enough to come back and get me and not leave me in the forest, so I appreciate that. But I think you ran collegiately, so you are a former college athlete, and I think you've completed the Boston Marathon, what, four times?
Six times.
Oh, six times. Not even four, was way too low. So that is an incredible accomplishment. It's an amazing thing. And I'm just wondering, you know, because I'm always in awe of endurance athletes, because it just, I think, requires such a strength of mind to be able to accomplish something like that. And so I'm just wondering, you know, from your vast career in running, like, what have you learned about yourself and your mind from endurance running? And how has it maybe had a positive impact on other areas of your life?
Well, I'm definitely slowing down these days. So probably next time we go running together, you'll be able to keep up just fine.
I appreciate that.
But I have stayed very consistent with it during the pandemic, because I think it's one of my tools to keep myself sane. And I think the biggest thing I've really learned from it is just like the pace at which you can expect results can be slow, but like very meaningful if you just stick with it and put in the work. And so I think working in a startup especially can feel like a marathon many times, because everything feels urgent. It always feels like you have more work than you can handle. There's so much to do. We're building a company, we're trying to achieve outcomes for students. You can never stop, really. But I think you have to have this attitude of like, we're working towards a big picture finish line, and we have to stay committed to it. We have to like put in the work, but also set the boundaries to stay sane and stay motivated and stay healthy. And so I just think it's given me that time horizon of like, looking for the long view rather than just chasing after like the short-term outcome and really staying committed and like trying to put in the work day after day, not just doing it in short sprints.
Yeah, that is such an apt metaphor. I'm wondering, how did you find your sweet spot as far as the pace? Like, how did you discover, you know, either in running or in your professional life, like how did you discover the pace at which you personally thrive?
That's a deep question, Anthony.
we're trying to go deep here.
In college, the race that I ran most frequently was the 800, which is two laps around the track. So it only takes around 2 minutes, but I liked it because it was like a very strategic race because it's the shortest race that is not run in lanes. So you have to like get out there, find your place, but then, you know, you're kind of sprinting for half a mile, so you can't die right away. And so I really liked that for the strategy aspects of it. I actually hated cross country because I thought that a 5K or a 6K was too long for me. But when I graduated, I got really into marathoning. And I think that's just because it's a totally different thing. You can go out for hours, just be out on the trails, you know, really focus on this long-term, very hard objective. And so I don't know that I have found my sweet spot, all that to say. Like, I think it's good to kind of change it up and to have some things where you're able to do this like quick strategic race. And maybe that's in the workplace context, more like the sprint where you are trying to get insights quickly or sell this thing or get this student a job, balanced with this longer term effort, which is just like putting in the work day after day.
Yeah, to one of your points that you made earlier, I would imagine that there's some trial and error with figuring something like that out. So maybe dabble in a lot of different things, experiment with a lot of different paces, and see, you know, kind of how it affects you. Okay, Amy, so I have a little tradition here, and I'll freely admit that I stole this from another podcast called The Founder's Field Guide, so it's important to cite your sources. I asked the question slightly differently, but it's where I got the idea. But I like to end with this question whenever I can, which is, what is the nicest thing that someone has ever done for you?
There are many ways I could answer this question because I've been lucky enough to have a lot of nice things done to me. But sticking to the work theme, when I was thinking about this, one of the nicest things is that actually I have had a coworker who I worked with at Acumen and worked very closely. Her name is Liz. And then she followed me to Passstream, where we came to Passstream together. And so one of the nicest things is that like someone would want to work with you again. And I think especially someone like her, who I just think is one of the most productive and positive people I know, it was incredibly nice to get to work with her, you know, in two different settings on really different kinds of projects, but to have that kind of professional relationship and know that she would not just want to have me as her boss one time, but actually to do it again. So that's been more of a privilege for me, but that was one of the nicest things that someone has done.
Yeah, I'm sure Liz will appreciate so much that you're shouting her out here and thinking of her to the answer to that question. That's so nice and well-deserved. Liz is one of our best. Amy, this has been great. I feel like there's so many other things that we could touch on. So maybe we do this again and you can kind of keep us up to date with all the trends and everything that's going on in ed tech and how career services at Passstream grows and change over the next couple months. So yeah, just thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking
thank
the time.
Thank you for having
me. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you'd like to learn more about Passstream, please visit pathstream.com or follow us on social media. And if you think you might be interested in starting a Passstream course, visit pathstream.com/programs. That's pathstream.com/programs. Until we talk to you again, happy learning.